Welcome to this edition of the New York Now podcast. I'm Karen DeWitt, sitting here in the Senate lobby with Fred LeBrun, longtime columnist for the Albany Times Union, and had many other positions when he worked there for how many years, Fred?
Oh, 50. In 3 weeks, 2 weeks, yes.
Just 50.
Just 50, but 50 is a long time. It's interesting. I started this right halfway through the last Constitutional Convention in 1967, and our offices were downtown on Sheridan Avenue at that time, and people walked up to the Capitol and walked down to file their stories. Can you imagine that?
Well, nobody walks anymore, first
well,
of all.
Right. That's right.
And the reason why we're doing this, the occasion, is you're finally taking a step back. You're going to keep your column, but just keep it like once a month, correct?
Once a month, yes, on the second week every month. And I don't know how long I'll keep doing that. It's actually for two reasons. One, I'm growing older. I'm more distanced from the people and the events, although I certainly am. I get unnerved and I get completely fired up by all the news that goes on. And nothing has been more dramatic. You know, we talk about climate change and extreme climate. We're living in an era of extreme politics. And it's hard not to take notice almost every day on things that we never would have expected over and over again. And that's very stimulating to our business, as you know, Karen.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes your head spin, in fact, these days. Yeah, I heard that you were going to retire in 2011, but then you didn't because Andrew Cuomo became governor.
Yes. Now, you know, I owe a great deal to our governor. And while I have been quite critical of him many times over, and I will continue to be, and I think deservedly, he has been, for me, the mother's milk of maintaining myself, because I wake up every day, I see what he says, I get fired up, and I go after him. And it just keeps me going, because he and I are so opposed in the way government should run. Not that he doesn't have great ideas, and I've often been a supporter of some of his ideas, but I don't like autocratic rule, which is what he's about, and I don't think anyone should like autocratic rule in a democracy. And he has been a very nasty piece of work on many occasions to the people in our business.
So why do you find that endlessly fascinating?
Because at the end of the day, he seems to get his message out directly to the people well enough to maintain a popularity rating that sometimes, to my mind, belies the actual accomplishments and the way he has conducted himself. He's very, very good at promoting himself, no matter what he gets out of something, in such a way that people walk away saying, yeah, he's doing a pretty good job.
All right. Well, I do want to ask you more about your 50 years career, but let's talk about Andrew Cuomo for a minute, as long as we're on this topic. He's making signals like he wants to run for president in 2020. I mean, there's a lot of ways to interpret what he's doing, but that's certainly, if you look through that lens, then a lot of what he's doing right now makes sense. Do you think he is running?
I do. I don't think there's any question he's running. I think he was even exploring a run 4 years ago, the last time through. There's no question that he has had added staff. He's consulted. This has all been widely reported. And it makes sense. New York, someone who is the leader of New York, is all automatically in a position to be considered for higher office, and that the only higher office really is to be president. And I think Andrew is the first serious candidate we've actually had for it since his father.
Yeah, and his father ended up not running in the end.
But
and I think we've heard Andrew Cuomo say that he's learned lessons from that.
But I know, of course, he won't tell us what those lessons are, and we'll have to study that for ourselves. He could, and I think will, hold out the possibility that he's running without committing himself right to the bitter end until he can see which way the wind blows. If there's one thing that is, that we can all agree on Andrew Cuomo, he knows how the wind blows, and he makes very careful strategies based on how he sees that happening.
Well, there's a Quinnipiac poll out today that shows that most New Yorkers don't want him to run for president.
Yes, and that of course he can make those polls change if he wants to. But that's an interesting observation. Recently, I read a David Friedlander piece on in Politico on how according to David Friedlander, the governor has solved New York. And I think he's got some very important, I wouldn't call them crises, but there are certainly great areas of concern ahead of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
The subways, the subway, Penn Station, downstate. He is really the governor of the New York City, because that's where his base is.
But, and that's where he's most popular currently.
Correct.
But, as you were saying, the MTA public transit is falling apart this summer.
Yes.
So perhaps before we even talk about 2020, need to talk about 2018, where he says he's running for re-election. But
correct.
What happens in New York City if he starts to lose that base of support?
Well, then he is going to have some real problems, not just over that, but in October we're going to have some corruption trial. Either a single trial, depending on
I'm going to get to that in a minute. Yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about that. And that's very heavy. But, yes, we are 2 weeks of extreme weather away from the city of New York turning sour on Andrew Cuomo. All we need to have are 10 days, and it's not out of the question, of 100-degree weather, of people trying to get on the subway, of trying to get home, of the just incredible mess at Penn Station. And, you know, all of a sudden, people start to pay attention. And that's what the governor relies on, that for the most part, most people don't pay attention to the news, and they don't pay attention to politics. And they just dismiss it. They say, that's politics. They're all going to do the same thing. They're all corrupt. They're all this. They're all that. Well, in fact, it's a very complicated watch we play with here. And that's not true. But it becomes true when it affects them.
And the trials you mentioned, this is Joe Prococo, the governor's former top aide. Several other associates are up on federal corruption charges, bribery, bid rigging. Those trials start as early as October, and some of them may be in January of 2018. Now, the governor has not been accused of any wrongdoing. He says he's cooperating. But we saw what happened with Chris Christie in Bridgegate. Once the trials came out, Christie looked bad, even though he wasn't charged with anything. I mean, that's a scenario that's got to worry the governor, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely, because I don't think there's a question that when those trials begin, the corruption trials, two of them probably, depending on what Judge Valerie Caproni comes up with and decides. But certainly what we're going to see is how we're going to see the hands behind the curtain. We're going to see how government worked during that period of time in terms of how the economic development deals were handled and the kind of discussions and where they were, those discussions happened. That they happened with Empire State Development. They happened on the second floor of the governor's office. They happened with people who were related directly to the governor. And that they had direct communications, because there is a flood, and I mean a flood of emails out there between all of these characters that will be part of that trial. That's all discoverable material.
Yeah, so this is kind of seeing the sausage made, and it's
exactly.
Never pretty.
No, it's not.
But they do use those BlackBerries where the emails disappear, correct? So maybe there may not be as much evidence.
Yes, but as I understand it from, and we've had some, through the motions that have been filed by the various defendants here, that there is a lot of material, and there's a lot of what is called Brady material that would perhaps be not quite as, it's material that the prosecution has to give to the defense that shows that maybe the defenses have some points to what they're trying to raise here in their motions. So we have a lot ahead of us, and all of it is going to reflect on the governor, because no, he can't hide. And you know, it's surprising how he has been able to hide from the MTA. He owns the MTA. It's his organization, and has been for years, and they're screwing it up big time.
So let's say that he survives the trials, he survives the MTA, he runs for re-election. Right now, as we're talking, there is no like big Republican name out there who could win. So then he wants to run for president in 2020. How do you run against Trump? And do you think that Americans would want another, pugnacious person from Queens running against a pugnacious person from Queens?
Well put, yeah. Well, I will quote the great Mario Cuomo, who said, between now and then, a pope can be born. And so we don't know how many things could go wrong for the Trump administration. If the election were held right now, or even in the next 6 months, we'll say, I don't think there's a Democrat in sight, including the governor, who could come close to toppling Donald Trump. As odd as that sounds, look at the Dow. Look at the economy. It's at record territory. I'm sorry. He is absolutely locked in for two terms until they can come up with a plan to get him out of there. And no one has a plan.
Well, that's true. But also, you know, we're talking in a week where the stuff with the Russians is really heating up. What I started thinking actually this week is maybe if you want to be a candidate in 2020, a Democrat, you should think about how would I run against Mike Pence?
Yes. Yes,
so how does somebody like Cuomo do that, and is that easier?
It's never going to be easier. The analogy I would draw is this. Mike Pence really represents more the Midwest and the rock-ribbed Republican side, the very conservative, evangelical, religiously oriented side. In New York State, that is represented by upstate New York. Upstate New York, where the governor is not all that popular, represents America. That we are America up here. New York City is not America. It's New York City.
Yeah.
And so he would have a tougher time with Pence than he had, would have taking Trump on. Now, he may not be able to beat Trump, but I think the Pence could rally a lot of forces that Trump can't. Really, that would hurt, that would be harder for Cuomo. Cuomo, I think, Andrew Cuomo, is very reluctant to take his ethnicity and export it into the Midwest. It doesn't. He feels it doesn't play well. He made that observation when he came into office, when he was a HUD guy, and the president would send him out to represent the Clinton administration, and he would be lost.
Yeah, a little bit of a fish out of water.
Exactly,
right?
Lost in Des Moines. So I think he would have a lot more trouble with Pence, actually. So that's not an easy game at all.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about your career. 50 years, as you mentioned at the beginning of this interview. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen in half a century of working in this business?
Well, you know, the people dedicated to it are the same. And the quality of journalism, I think, has actually gotten better. There are many fewer newspapers, but there are many other sources of news gathering and display for the media. But overall, the digital age has been a great disappointment, not just to me, but I think to a lot of people of my generation, because I think people are more poorly informed now with all the plethora of available information than they were 50 years ago when I started. And people would do their shift work, and they'd come home and get the Knickerbocker News, and they'd read in the afternoon what went on. And they maybe had one other paper, and they'd buy a tabloid, and maybe they'd buy the Trib, or they'd buy the New York Times and the Times Union. Newspapers mattered more, but I think people had a greater respect for A, education, B, news. News that really was identifiable as news. It was nonpartisan. And of course, the partisan thing has gone just nuts. It's become, it's me or nobody, and that kind of thing just doesn't
play. And the social media has broke a lot of the rules, I think, absolutely, of journalism that, you know, I personally even used to have.
Oh, yes. Right now, you could say anything you want to, truthfully or untruthfully. I mean,
even journalists, though?
No. But it comes out of bloggers, and it comes out of political campaigns, but it also, it comes out of the way people expect news to be. But what it's done is it's recalibrated what people expect. They expect anything, and they'll believe anything if they want to believe it. And it's all about reinforcing prejudice as opposed to trying to inform yourself. And that's very dangerous.
So what's the future, especially the future of journalism? Like, we're here at the Capitol. There's a lot of younger reporters, younger than us, who work here. And they work unbelievably long hours. They're excellent. But at a lot of, you know, kind of some of the outlets are somewhat uncertain what their future is, their new outlets, you know, will it be there? Are they going to be able to have a 50-year career doing journalism, you know? I mean, I wonder about that a lot.
Well, I can't tell you how. I am just dazzled by the people. My colleagues at the Times Union, the youngest ones who come in, are far better trained, they're far better educated, they're far smarter than I am or was. So I think the tools are all there, and I feel very bad for them as far as the prospects are concerned. But think about it, though, Karen. Can you imagine, even now with the turmoil with the digital age and social media and all the stuff we're seeing with Trump and the way he's played it and manipulated it really very, very successfully for himself, Can you imagine us living in a world without someone caring that the news is neutral and just be news? It's an odd thing. It occurred to me the other day as I was rototilling my garden that the concept of fake news in Trump's world is real because everything is a half truth in what he deals in and the world and the people around him and so he gives it validity.
Yeah, and there's two different versions of reality right now depending on what news channel you watch, and that's pretty striking if you ever watch some of the other channels than you usually watch, which I try to, keep aware of. They definitely have different spins on things, and that's been really different.
The economics of the media in the future is what is concerning, because to this day I don't think newspapers have figured out effectively how to make money from the digital age, and yet the newspapers remain the source for most of the information, much, I wouldn't say most anymore, but much of the information that we rely on. It becomes the pivot for commentary, for the bloggers and for social media and for campaigns and everything else. I can't see that world can possibly disappear, but what it can do is what we've seen with the banking community, for example. Great centralizations. Just two or three just huge organizations that will run and compete against each other. And that takes away all the local news, the old Tip O'Neill, that all politics is local and all news is local.
Well, we're seeing that now. There's far fewer local coverage. So is that the future? Are you predicting a bleak future for us?
I wish I could paint a rosy picture.
Yeah, anything you can say happy to end this podcast?
Yeah. There is something, and that is that I think that no one, even the great cynics about the media, sees as a diminished role for the media. I think that more than ever, it's so important what we do and have always done. I mean, I've believed in it for 50 years, and I believe in it more now than ever. Sometimes I get very disillusioned at some of the turns it takes. So I think that we're in good shape. There's going to be a lot of shakedowns, and a lot of smaller, weaker newspapers are going to disappear, and that's just the way it is. It's not going to... there's no way to stop that. But the central role of the media is not going to change. It's more important now than ever.
Well, that's good to hear. Thanks for joining us, Fred Lebrun. For the New York Now podcast, I'm Karen DeWitt. Join us next time.